Thank you for joining us on another episode of the Trees and Lines podcast. On this episode, we are joined by Cindy Music, Director of Vegetation Management Services at Rappahannock Electric Cooperative. Cindy talks with us about their helicopter program, the challenges of a cooperative, and much more. Have a listen and hope you enjoy. Well, we're very pleased today to have Cindy Music with us. She's from Rappahannock Electric Cooperative. And why don't we start off, Cindy, by just you give us a little bit of background. Tell us about your company.
Sure. Rappahannock Electric Cooperative is, as you may have guessed, a cooperative in the central part of Virginia. We serve about 180,000 members. We have about 7,500 miles of overhead line that my department maintains across 22 counties in Virginia.
Very good. You're also president, or you're with an association of cooperatives, is that correct?
There's quite a few working groups within this organization related to E&O, related to finance, related to customer service, and so forth. And we were able to stand up a vegetation management working group last year. So we have met a few times in person, a couple times actually, and it's fantastic.
Cindy, for context for our viewers, maybe you can kind of frame the overall sort of co-op market. So for example, like I think Rappahannock is like what, top five in the country in terms of size. Is that about right?
Yes.
Yeah,
we are.
And just for context also, like how many co-ops do you think there are across the U.S.?
I believe there's over 900 cooperatives. Most of them are small. Most of them are around 40, 50 employees and, you know, a few thousand members. We are one of the biggest. We have over 400 employees and... it's a big utility.
One of the things that, you know, and Cindy, you and I met, I think, for the first time at Trees and Utilities last year. And you know, we've chatted a little bit since then. One of the most interesting things that stood out to me when you gave us a little bit of color in terms of how you guys operate, how you guys function, is just how technologically plugged in you guys are. And at least to me, it felt like you're kind of ahead of your peer group, specifically your co-op peer group. But like, where does all that sort of come from? Like, where is that sort of focus on technology being kind of data focused? Like, are these initiatives that you yourself are kind of driving and leading? Is this kind of the leadership team as a whole has committed to this? Like, where is that coming from? And why has it been so effective?
I would say it's coming from a few different places. We definitely see the value in technology. We see the value in analytics and knowing what your numbers are and then creating an actionable plan based on those numbers. And our leadership supports that 1,000%. And so we've been able to kind of leverage some of that data over the last few years, put that into some tools that we could use, and begin to see results, which is, you know, at the end of the day, exactly what you're going for.
Cycle's sort of been a mainstay, but if I recall, you've started moving away from the fixed time cycle that most utilities are on. Is that correct? And if it is, tell us a little bit about what you're doing.
So we are moving that way, but we are not making big strides. We're making steps forward. We do have a system in place. It's a cycle-based maintenance system. About 3 years ago, we decided to supplement that with a mid-cycle inspection and removal program. And the reason why is because we're on a really long cycle. It's 5 years. And in 5 years, a lot can happen with tree health, with sites stability, and just changes in the environment. So we started looking at, you know, what are our outages actually caused by? Are they caused by grow-ins or blow-ins? And on our system, that's not our issue. Our issue is whole tree failures outside the right of way, normally by live trees, normally by not weather related.
That's, I think, not unique to you. Very few grow in outages. They're all from off the right of way. So,
right. So we took that information and, you know, we have set up some kind of dashboard type tools in-house, and that was done in conjunction with our analytics department and our OMS system, and information that was relayed basically from the linemen to dispatch into those databases. And we wanted to get that information into the tools of our vegetation managers, foresters, just like myself. All of those are used when we're looking at that mid-cycle work, when we're looking at the routine maintenance work. And, you know, if I guess the goal, the end goal is going to be to leverage that data along with some other technology pieces to ultimately come up with a sweet spot cycle length for every circuit on the system. And particularly use that information along with other information that we're starting to glean and really get to that prescriptive approach. But it's kind of a, you know, REC specific prescriptive approach, and it's based on a lot of research that we've done. We've done hundreds of post-mortem investigations looking at what exactly caused trees to fail on our system. And we think that's probably the basis of, you need to know where you're at and what your issues are to get to the next steps. So we've been collecting that data over the last 3 years. Our analytics department, who has created a spinoff called Brillet, has actually stood up an app for us twice to record all kinds of information about tree-caused outages, the location, the, you know, all kinds of different factors that we're interested in, species and slope and height and DBH and, you know, any other kind of history. And then the biggest thing is, you know, what caused this tree to cause an outage? That's what we really want to know, because then we can use that to move ourselves forward.
If capital, if money was not a limiting factor for your program, let's just say, what would be some of the things that you would, you know, your wish list of things that you'd be like, hey, I would do this, I would do that, I would do this. Like, what are some of the things that, like, you would perhaps implement?
I would have an instantaneous snapshot using satellite data. That would be probably the first big grab. And I'd want that integrated with the vegetation management software system. We're kind of on our way with that already. We, the last 2 weeks, spent doing some training with our new VMS system. And we are going to be pulling satellite data into that system and getting that into the hands of everyone that can use it, not just our foresters, but all the way down to the crew level. Anybody that fills out a timesheet will be able to see where those hazard trees are. Other than that, you know, would I like to be able to wiggle my nose and have resources just fall out of the sky to take care of every single one of those trees? Yeah. Yeah. That's what's causing our outages. And we have a map of them. Yeah. Related to our system and, you know, related to our historical outage data. But, you know, we prioritize those based on how many customers it serves. So it's back to that Gifford Pinchot, who was one of the founders of forestry in the United States, and the whole U.S. Forest Service mandate, multiple use mandate, was kind of based on the greatest good for the greatest number of people. And that's kind of how we look at, to a certain extent, going after these mid-cycle trees is, you know, if it's going to affect, you know, just one or two people, do we want to put our resources there, or do we want to put it on the section of the circuit, the three phase, particularly within the high reliability zone between the substation and the first downline device? and it affects several thousand people. You know, that's kind of where we focused.
So as you work with the other co-ops, are you cooperatively coming up with systems and plans, or how's that work?
I like what you did with that.
I
that
did
was
too,
pretty
Phil.
Good.
Savvy. Look at you.
No pun intended.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there are about 50 cooperatives that have expressed interest in the vegetation management working group. And we have a quarterly call. And on that quarterly call, earlier this year, we decided to stand up three sub working groups. And those three sub working groups are related to herbicides and TGRs, number one. Number two, contracts and contracting methods. And number three, tree caused outages and reporting. Imagine which one I'm involved in. But yeah, and we have really smart people running those three working groups. I kind of head the main group, but each of those working groups has participants, and they are from all over the country. And we narrowed that down from a field of like 10, you know, other subjects that we could be talking about, because veg is such a wide field. You know, there's safety, there's you know, just using analytics and reliability metrics and, you know, training and fire and, you know, all these different directions we could have gone, but we needed to narrow it down so that we could focus. So for the next year or so, we have stood up those three sub working groups. And so they have lots of things that they're talking about and, you know, kind of finding out where our niche is in the industry, you know, where we want to take these and, you know, how we want to disseminate that information out to our larger cooperative membership.
I understand you're doing some helicopter trimming still.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Is that a national park land or?
Yeah, it is. We had never done helicopter work at REC. And we've got some steep slopes. We've got some mountainous areas. We've got a lot of wetlands. And we wanted to be very deliberate about where we used it and when. So there's several circuits that serve Shenandoah National Park, which is one of the most beautiful parks in the country. And at one point, we were going in every year, you know, with another section of a circuit that happened to transgress across national parkland lands. And about 5 years ago, we said, why are we doing this? Why don't we just put all of that work, because it does require special use permits and a pesticide use permit and, you know, lots of communication back and forth and mapping and very specific ways of entering and exiting the facilities and so forth. So we put that all in one cycle. And then we met with them and we said, okay, well, this is what we plan to do. In years past, we had sent climbers in to do that work and it would take 6 months. And, you know, there was no cell service. It was very steep slopes, lots of rattlesnakes, lots of bears. And that's fine. It just goes with the territory, right? But, you know, is there a way we can do this more efficiently and effectively and kind of less of a visitor impact? So, yeah, we started our helicopter program in Shenandoah National Park. And they were a great partner. It ended up taking place a lot during COVID. And so the park was shut down for part of that. So it really didn't have any kind of impact to the visitor. B, we could kind of figure out the logistics because it is one of those programs that you work with every department. You get overhead guys in there, safety's in there, communications has to, you know, blanket everyone to make sure they know what we're doing and why. And that's one of the kind of co-op principles is treat me fair and serve me well. And I'm paraphrasing, but we try to take that to the nth degree. it's important not to hide what we're doing, because we are using this for a deliberate reason, and that's for access and it's for safety. And, you know, we were able to get in and get out and get all that work done in a few days versus a few months.
You know, your transparency, it sounds like the way you communicate, I think you guys have been even recognized for how effective you are at communicating with your customer base, right? I believe you've received like recognition awards for that. Like that level of transparency, that commitment to your customer base, like, again, is this how the REC culture has been, REC's culture? Like, this is how you guys operate? Because this is some of the things that we've observed that you guys are doing, from technology to how you communicate, is frankly like somewhat unique. I haven't seen this sort of amongst the peer groups out there. So like, again, is this just your culture? I mean, you've been there for how long?
10 years.
10 years. And where were you prior to REC?
I spent another 12 years in an investor and utility Pepco in Washington, D.C.
Yep. Okay. Yep. Yeah, like since you came here 10 years ago, has it always been like this, or is this just something that continues to evolve at REC?
We've always had a great communications department. I would say probably 7-8 years ago, we got a new director, and she kind of took it to the next level times 10. I learned very early on that her name is Casey Hollins, and I knew that, you know, she was somebody that could really help my department, because we have a lot of things that we do aren't necessarily very popular. And for example, if I had a helicopter coming in my backyard and no one told me what was going on,
oh man,
I would be livid. Like, first of all, what are they doing? Why on earth, you know? So they do a fantastic job of getting information out to the public. I'll tell you a funny story. About 2 years ago, 3 years ago, they put a little blurb in the newsletter that goes out to our membership. It's a magazine, and it's, you know, 180,000 members. And they said, you know, it was an article about vegetation management and the things we do and why we do it and trees cause outages and, you know, the information that we wanted to get out. And then at the very end, they put a two sentence blurb at the end that said, oh, and by the way, if you want wood chips, we recycle all those and give those to our members. If we're on the circuit that you're, you know, we'll deliver it to you if you're close by, basically. Well, our membership reached out and said, we all want chips for you and chips for you and chips for you. So we had a lot of requests come in from across the cooperative, and they weren't necessarily where we were working, and we can't really spend the resources to drive, you know, 45 minutes to deliver a load of chips. So they do a really good job of getting information out, and people actually read what they do because it's fun and interesting and innovative and attractive. And I would say that it's a continually evolving process of how they're always updating things and always updating the website, and the message is pretty much the same, but the look is sometimes different. But no, they're a great partner within the cooperative.
So help us out with the award. It was a J.D. Powers Award for that, right? Specific to veg management?
Oh, yeah. So, well, they win awards all the time. The public relations, customer communications department is constantly winning awards because they are good, really good at what they do. But, this quarter, in terms of, the question was, are you aware of vegetation management within your cooperative? We won. So we were the number one cooperative in the country. So that was fantastic. Exciting.
So they knew about it. Did they think positively about it?
It seems
there's two ways to know. Well, very good.
So, I mean, we do communications with members. I send out a postcard to everyone before we get there just to let them know what we're doing. And that's for trimming and for herbicide. And, you know, if someone has questions, there's an 800 number to call at the bottom. And then basically they get right to a forester. We have 9 professional foresters working on our EC system, 3 in each of 3 field offices, operation center offices. They work very closely with our ONC departments, and they are all very well trained, all degreed, all certified arborists, and most of them are actually utility arborists as well.
Cindy values education and qualifications. Have you finished it yet? Cindy's working on her PhD out of West Virginia.
Oh. Yeah. Is it West Virginia? Go Mountaineers. It is. Yeah. Dr. Greg Dahl.
Oh, very good.
Yeah. I'm writing. That's what I did all weekend, basically. I'm writing about statistics. I'm writing about things that we've learned through our research of looking at tree cost outages post-mortem, if you will, and how that relates to actionable and using technology and a whole bunch of other things. But yeah.
So Cindy, I'm Canadian. I was in Toronto, and all the, you know, the fires that, you know, are taking place in the Montreal area, Eastern Canada, Western Canada, like you can see the effects of that. You know, Athens outside of Greece is on fire. So, you know, your industry as a whole, like a focus on vegetation management, seems to be getting a lot of national and global attention. Has that trickled down to the co-op and smaller utility levels in terms of like increased budgets, or has the more macro focus changed anything at your level, right? In terms of the size of what you guys do and what you focus on?
So I have a couple thoughts about this topic. One is we are very blessed in Virginia to have not had drought conditions and to have a primarily hardwood forest ecotype versus our friends out west that don't and have been in severe drought situations for decades. That being said, we took it upon ourselves to develop a wildfire management plan for the cooperative this year. And so that's in place, and, you know, it'll be updated frequently. I don't know how many of our East Coast utilities have done something similar. I'm guessing some have and some haven't. In terms of, you know, increased budgets or what have you, you know, we're always cognizant of fire prevention and proper forest management. I wouldn't say that's increased our budget related to that. I will say, though, at a macro or national or even international level, I would say that it's really brought to folks' attention forest management. What is forestry? How does utility forestry play a role? And is utility forestry forestry, or is it arboriculture? Or is it a kind of a hybrid mix between the two? And, you know, I know that utility forestry has kind of not been part of a national conversation related to forest management and the science and art of forestry. I think it should be. I think it should be represented at national conventions. I think it should be talked about. I think research articles should be published in the Journal of Forestry. And that's something I think we're moving towards. And every time I talk to somebody that's in those organizations, you know, I mention it because I think it goes kind of flies under the radar. You know, we've always been part of the ISA, and I think, you know, absolutely that'll continue. But I think when you start talking about fire suppression and fire prevention and fire management, you can't have those conversations without talking about how vegetation is maintained around overhead lines and the significant role that utilities play.
You may be leading the way, but more and more utilities in the East are talking about the fire mitigation plans.
To your point, though, that it's increased the awareness of, I think, the overall industry. So obviously, bad outcome, right? Not great things that are happening, but it's certainly drawing the right attention. And I think where we're going to see the impact is increased education, greater commitment to technology, PUC, scaling of dollars, and then a lot of the things that you've been leading, I think, will become more the standard across the industry. Now, you guys have very successfully done things that I think will get carried through at a larger scale, and it will become the norm. So, because we can see that data. Like, I am very obsessed with tracking data and industry trends and where are we headed. You know, who's kind of the thought leaders of the industry, you guys, of course, being one of them. So I find it very interesting. And I think this thing is going to, this thing, when I say this thing, I mean, you know, whatever you would want to define as a whole in terms of forestry, but I think it's really, it's on a lot of people's minds. I'll just say that.
It's too bad it takes national news and catastrophic fires and that kind of thing to bring it to people's attention. But
yeah,
you know, sometimes it's a spotted owl. Sometimes it's a town burning down.
Yeah. Yeah.
Depending on the decade.
That's absolutely right. Well, this was, Phil, I don't know if this was a fascinating conversation.
Cindy, I really appreciate the way you're leading things.
Yeah, very much so.
I think a few years ago we did a benchmark and it was less than 15% of utilities studied how trees cause outages on their property. And that's what they're spending all their money to prevent. So I'm glad to hear you're into it and you're looking at it and you're learning. So
no, fantastic.
That number of things you're doing, really exciting. It'll be interesting to watch.
Well, thank you.
Any thoughts you want to leave us with?
I think we're making some big strides at Rappahannock. We're working with our IT company, Brillit, that's been stood up recently, and we're developing some different products and some different systems that I think, you know, when we're in the midst of proving how these work and how they look, but I think long-term, these are processes and some software and some apps even that can probably be replicated and used in other places. So stay tuned.
Very good, Cindy. We want to thank you for being with us, sharing your ideas. Really a promising future there.
Yeah, Cindy, thanks. This was fun.
Appreciate the opportunity. Take care, guys.
That's it for this episode of the Trees and Lines podcast, brought to you by Iapetus Infrastructure Services. If you like the show, please give us a rating of 5 stars on Apple or Spotify. If you have any questions or comments on any of our episodes or ideas for topics or guests in the future, we'd love to hear from you. Please contact us at treesandlines@iapetusllc.com. We'll chat with you soon.